The following is an AI reading of my blog called
How to Give Bitcoin Back Its Peer-to-Peer Character and Use It to Its Full Potential.
It is for people who don't have time to read blogs and can listen to podcasts though. So, let's go!
In this chapter, we'll discuss the concept of different versions of Bitcoin being sold by businesses at the same price, yet with distinct properties. Be cautious of scams related to bank Bitcoin and KYC, as they are not equivalent to actual Bitcoin. Now, let's consider a scenario where an economic crisis unfolds, supply chains break down, and there's high demand for cars. If you purchased a car and sold it after 1 year, your earnings would likely surpass the standard inflation rate. However, owning a car can be quite complex, so instead of buying the car itself, you decide to purchase a car certificate. This document certifies that you own the vehicle, but you'll never actually have access to it physically. You're only able to sell the certificate for dollars, without ever seeing or using the car itself. You can use it to speculate on increasing prices, but you cannot perform typical car activities like driving into the woods or using it for daily tasks such as taking kids to school or going to work. If you need to transport heavy items like freshly printed books about cryptocurrencies, you cannot do so because all you possess is a piece of paper stating that someone else has your car and charges you for storage. You don't have direct access to the vehicle, and the issuer advises selling the certificate on the market to buy another car with cash from a dealer. This does not mean there's no actual car. It's likely parked in an affordable location for registration and storage. The only possible interaction with your stored Bitcoin is instructing the company holding it to sell it for dollars and wire you the proceeds. Despite people claiming that all car metaphors are incorrect, I chose to use one. This accurately represents how third-party stored Bitcoin operates. You purchase it as if acquiring it in your personal hardware wallet, frequently paying fees for exchange or custody. The company reports everything to various authorities. Typically, the only action you can take with this bank coin is exchanging it for fiat currency, which may lead to challenges like tax responsibilities. However, what could we do if our Bitcoin was genuinely in our wallet? Is the sole purpose of Bitcoin merely waiting for its value to increase before selling it? What does actively using or engaging with your Bitcoin entail, similar to driving a car, enjoying music on its sound system, or resting in the back seat? I have prepared a table of the different options for what can be done with Bitcoin. I've broken down three distinctly different forms of Bitcoin that people refer to as Bitcoin. The first is something I call Bankcoin. It's Bitcoin stored with a third party. This can be a custodian company, PayPal, Revolut, and others, or you can have it stored on an exchange, Coinbase, Kraken, and others. This method of ownership is characterized by the fact that you don't have private keys, and thus the ability to send a signed transaction to the network. In certain circumstances, for example, if it's a balance on an exchange, you can ask the exchange to send bitcoins to an address. Beware, this is not always an arbitrary address. Most exchanges, thanks to FATF, GAFI recommendations, only allow withdrawals to your own wallet. So you can't send such bitcoins to just any address, but only to one that you directly control. This is written in those terms and conditions that no one reads and clicks accept, somewhere on page 30. In practice, this translates into the fact that when you request a cryptocurrency withdrawal, the exchange may ask you to sign a declaration with the private key corresponding to the recipient address that says you own this address. This happens most often if it's a withdrawal to another exchange, and using the travel rule, the two exchanges tell each other who the account holder is, and find that the names don't match for these accounts. The second coin we will examine is what I call a KYC coin. This is a Bitcoin that you bought on an exchange where you revealed your identity through the KYC Know Your Customer process. In this situation, similar to Bankcoin, you likely submitted a photo of your ID, proof of address, and possibly underwent online biometric verification for the exchange. You might have even rotated the ID so that the app could verify the hologram or other security features on the document. This account is directly connected to you, meaning the exchange can and most likely will share information about this account with third parties, including your identity and what you're purchasing. These third parties may include various tax authorities, financial police, chain analysis firms, and several other institutions. In comparison, a KYC coin differs from a bank coin in that once purchased, it is withdrawn into your personal hardware wallet. This means you possess the private keys, and while the exchange is aware of the purchase, they no longer control your coins. When I refer to Bitcoin in this context, I am talking about Bitcoin that isn't directly linked to your identity institutionally and is stored in your own hardware wallet. You could have received Bitcoin as payment for work, goods sold, financial settlements, or you might have purchased it anonymously from a friend, a crypto trader, a Bitcoin ATM without identity requirements, or anyone else. To obtain self-sovereign Bitcoin without KYC, explore the Vexel app, an open-source non-profit platform that helps you find someone to buy or sell Bitcoin as intended. Additionally, watch their informative video on why this is crucial, sovereignty. One of the primary features of Bitcoin is its sovereignty over one's property. This means that Bitcoin belongs solely to you and no one else. You have complete control over how it's used, spend it however you desire, or keep it safe with no possibility of anyone taking it away unless you agree and sign off on the transaction. In this context, Bankcoin is not a favorable option. You use it by asking a third party to perform an action for you. For example, please sell it for dollars and transfer me the funds, or please sign a transaction and send it to my wallet. Note that not all custodians support this operation. As of now, you cannot withdraw your Bankcoin, Bitcoin from platforms like PayPal or Revolut into your own wallet. However, issues don't stop there. The third party may go bankrupt, be ordered by a higher power, the government, to freeze your account, or even transfer your Bitcoins to a different address without your permission. Typically, the only action you can take with Bankcoin is selling it. Even if you manage to withdraw it into your personal wallet, this still requires approval from a third party who will sign off on the transaction according to your instructions. In summary, with Bankcoin, you have minimal sovereignty compared to KYC coin and Bitcoin. In the table, KYC coin has only one smiling emoji out of three. Your Bitcoins are secure in your hardware wallet, as only you control it. However, unforeseen events may occur, such as Executive Order 6102 from 1933, when Franklin D. Roosevelt seized gold from American citizens by requiring them to sell their gold to the state at a specific price. If you have KYC coin and find yourself in such a situation, it would be difficult to avoid revealing your Bitcoins if you've already listed them on reporting forms or haven't taxed their sale yet. Since 1933, similar situations have arisen globally. In Iran, for instance, while Bitcoin miners are legally allowed to mine Bitcoins, they must sell them to the state's central bank. I'm not advocating breaking democratic laws here. Rather, I want to emphasize that democracy can quickly transform into a dictatorship, leading to institutionalized theft. Most people, when discussing sovereignty, share stories about informing the state, for example, mixing coins in a CoinJoin mixer, selling them for Monero, or losing them through a boating accident. Story: is this a good strategy? With KYC coin, the main issue isn't the specific coin and its identifiability on the blockchain. Bitcoin doesn't travel on the blockchain with your name on it. The primary concern is the information that the exchange knows. For instance, you purchased $357 worth of Bitcoin on an exchange on September 1st, 2022. This information is automatically sent to tax authorities by the exchange if considered a reportable account. Within the CRS, using FATCA or other local regulations applicable to either you or the exchange. These reporting and financial surveillance agreements do not require a court order, reasonable suspicion, and are often automated and broad. When it comes to confiscation, you have two choices: either show the coins in your wallet and hand them over, or demonstrate when you sold the virtual asset by showing the year on your tax return. The term virtual asset is state-speak, similar to how there was a Ministry of Truth and a Ministry of Love in the novel 1984. Governments resist using the term cryptocurrencies as much as possible because they are not considered actual currencies or money. Additionally, the prefix crypto is quite dangerous since it signifies the mentioned sovereignty. As a result, even though we all know they're discussing cryptocurrencies, governments talk about certain virtual assets to stress that they are virtual and not real. However, in this case, one might also refer to fiat currencies as virtual assets because they too are primarily electronic and created within a database, serving as a virtual record. A similar concept to StateSpeak is that of an unhosted wallet. My hardware wall, it is just a regular cryptocurrency wall, it nobody has ever referred to it as an unhosted wallet. However, states have begun discussing certain special unhosted wallets, which are actually normal wallets, in order to differentiate them from some hosted wallets. These hosted wallets, which we refer to as custodial, are quite peculiar and not widely used within the crypto industry. To gain insight into the minds of politicians and bureaucrats, it is helpful to pay attention to the words they frequently use and those they avoid. Unfortunately, their thought processes may not be very appealing. In summary, an official might not care if you mixed coins on a chain using Wasabi Wallet or Whirlpool Mixer, exchanged them for Monero, or sent them through Lightning. The main concern is whether or not you possess the coins, in which case they could be confiscated, or have used them and owe taxes to the government. A common second strategy people use is referred to as the boating accident. You were on a yacht with your hardware wallet, and a wave caused it to fall out of your pocket, resulting in the loss of your coins. Alternatively, someone may have stolen them from you. This excuse is not as effective as one might think, especially in situations where we're trying to protect ourselves against potential dictatorships. It's essential that this scenario be well documented. If your coins were stolen, are you aware of a crime being committed? In many cases, you are obligated to report it. Do you have a police report? Falsely accusing someone is also considered a crime, so filing a fabricated criminal report is not advisable. Were you indeed on a yacht when the incident occurred? How did you pay for it? Were there any witnesses who can confirm this story? Additionally, were there large waves present during that time? And if the private keys were drowned in the accident, why have those coins of yours moved since then? In my opinion, all these excuses don't hold up in a dictatorship. The effectiveness of key extraction would be high if you were physically present in such a violent situation. People enjoy daydreaming and theorizing about how they'll outsmart those in power. I, too, often have dreams about heroically defending an entire village from invaders, thanks to my black belt in Taekwondo. However, when things get tough, that's unlikely to be the strategy I'd use in a conflict. Censorship resistance is part of sovereignty. This means I can create a valid transaction, and the network will process it, regardless of third-party decisions. With Bankcoin, you often cannot perform the transaction at all. The only way to withdraw money is by selling it for dollars. However, if it's an equilibrium you possess through a cryptocurrency exchange, you can't withdraw your funds unless certain circumstances have occurred, such as the exchange being hacked or bankrupt, or your account has been frozen due to inactivity or because of identity verification issues. An instance is the ordeal my friend faced when his account with roughly $10,000 was blocked by a Bankcoin institution. They objected to a $100 transaction he executed several months prior and were reluctant to resolve this issue promptly. As a result, my friend's account remained frozen for numerous weeks, despite the balance being significantly larger than the contested transaction value. Ultimately, it was determined that the transaction posed no real problems. Bank account holders frequently grapple with similar dilemmas. In my local area, there have been instances where banks demand documentation for all income sources. If not provided in a timely manner, they may freeze accounts. Some disagree with the term censorship, but I believe it is appropriate as financial communication is indeed communication. Making it impossible constitutes censorship. On Twitter, someone asked Jesse Powell, CEO of Kraken Exchange at the time of writing this, it was the fourth largest crypto exchange based on spot trading volume, whether it was possible for the police to order account freezes without a court order. He replied, 100% yes, it has happened and will happen, and 100% yes, we would be forced to adhere to such an order. If you're concerned about this, don't keep your funds in any centralized or regulated custodian, as we cannot protect you. take possession of your coins or cash out and trade only through peer-to-peer transactions. With a KYC coin, unlike a bank coin, it is not possible to prevent a transaction from being sent, but it is possible to punish circumvention of the imposed censorship. No one can freeze your cryptocurrency balance in your wallet by technical means, but they can punish any movement of the balance. When they see your coins and on a transparent blockchain they move, that can be a problem. This problem can be partially addressed by a payment method that doesn't have a permanent record of transactions, let alone with a timestamp, such as using the Lightning Network. However, you need to have the channels open before the problem arises. It is better to switch from KYC coin to Bitcoin. Monetary inflation. Inflation originally meant the growth of the money supply. The money supply is inflating. Prices are not inflating, but rising. Note another case of statespeak. In this section, we'll discuss monetary inflation, which refers to the growth of the money supply. It's important to note that there will only ever be 21 million bitcoins in existence. Price inflation is primarily caused by the production of new monetary units, such as when money is printed. In some cases, prices may rise due to shortages, but this typically affects specific goods and not the overall price level. Central bankers often attribute price increases to unforeseen circumstances like pandemics, political events, or climate crises. However, we know that creating new monetary units leads to rising prices. We can consider central bankers' discussions of unforeseen circumstances as a way to divert attention from the real cause, the creation of new monetary units by financial institutions. Interestingly, new fiat money units can also be created by commercial banks and even blockchain projects such as MakerDAO. That is the reason why we don't actually know exactly how many new monetary units there are. A database entry is pretty much free. With Bitcoin, we don't know what the prices will be, because as I write these lines, the Bitcoin economy is still a small slice of the overall pie, so it doesn't have that much of an impact on prices. But the cause of the problems: counterfeiting money, giving away new units to friends, central planning of consumption, subsidies, financing states through debt, is clear and is not a threat with Bitcoin, not even with a KYC coin. For Bankcoin, we cannot tell if they are creating virtual account balances that are not backed by real reserves, true Bitcoins, although some Bankcoin institutions allow us to verify this with cryptographic proof of reserves. That's why I put a question mark next to the in the case of Bankcoin. The advantage here is that monetary inflation does not significantly affect the rest of the market. Fractional reserves can lead to the collapse of a specific financial institution. However, they do not have much impact on real reserves. Now, let's talk about lending and how an institution manages its coins in relation to backing. Do they lend these coins to third parties to generate additional interest? While this can be confirmed in some particular cases with Bankcoin, generally speaking, we are unaware of the details. In recent instances of Bankcoin institutions failing, it has been discovered that they did not manage their funds as claimed. They were making loans without sufficient coverage, and borrowers failed to repay them. Fortunately, you need not worry about this when dealing with your personal bitcoins in a wallet. Moving on to another topic, the number go up. NGU technology is of great importance for many people within the Bitcoin community. They specifically want to open an app where they can view their cryptocurrency balance and desire for the number representing the fiat value of their account to increase. There's nothing wrong with this, as working with volatility and the hard money property is something you'll encounter in various sections of this book. Additionally, you'll also learn that the number indicating the fiat value can decrease sometimes significantly. Bitcoin enthusiasts refer to the fiat value increasing characteristic as NGU technology, NGU tech, or number go up. It's somewhat ironic how people may place a complex technology like Bitcoin into a simple box when it aims to establish an entirely new sector within the parallel economy. At first glance, it might seem that regardless of the form Bitcoin takes, the number should continue growing similarly across all types of coins. That may be true most of the time, but with Bankcoin, that's only true as long as the company we have Bitcoins deposited with is functioning, hasn't been hacked, hasn't gone bankrupt, hasn't had its Accounts frozen has access to the banking network and can pay out balances. So the number will grow for everyone equally, but only in KYC coin and Bitcoin do we have control over our balances and we don't have to rely on third parties. And that's the point of Bitcoin, collateral for loans. If we get into a situation in life where we need to refinance something and would like to use Bitcoin as collateral for a loan, we can normally only do so if we have private keys. A Bankcoin provider can offer its own loan services, but so far few Bankcoin institutions do so. If you have private keys, KYC, coin, and Bitcoin, you have much wider options. Curious on how to use collateralized loans for tax benefits and enjoying your Bitcoin without having to worry about the price too much? Check out my course and ebook titled How to Harness the Value of Bitcoin Without Having to Sell It, where I explain how to use Bitcoin collateralized loans. Portability across borders. Only cash up to $10,000 can be transferred across the border. By the way, when this limit was created, it was really a lot of money. What we see here is a hidden lowering of the limits not by legislators, but by inflation. In many European countries, we have limits on cash payments. In Slovakia, the limit is 5,000 euros. If inflation is over 10% by the time I write these lines, in 7 years, 5,000 euros will have half the purchasing power. So we can see that the restrictions on what we can do with our money are only increasing as states print money and thus devalue it. Electronic transactions also have their limitations. They are under scrutiny, and institutions that arrange transfers across borders require explanations of origin, purpose, and so on. For taking my own money across the border, Bitcoin needs no introduction when you can send a valid transaction to the network, meaning you don't have a bank coin, but rather a Bitcoin with private keys. By the way, Bitcoin is never transferred across borders. It exists in the cloud in a decentralized peer-to-peer network and isn't located within any single country. Ease of purchase, liquidity, and user experience. We are now reaching the part of the table where there are more question marks, which doesn't look very good for Bitcoin. I'll start with user experience, including the user interface. In this area, we have question marks in all three cases because everyone is comfortable with something a bit different. For me personally, the Bankcoin and KYC coin experience is probably the worst. Having to fill out contracts and forms, proving my identity to someone, and answering questions about things I consider private strikes me as a very poor user experience. Many argue that it's a one-time thing, and you just have to suffer through it before everything is available in a nice smartphone app or web interface. Recently, exchanges and various financial institutions have started refreshing KYC and AML information regularly. Now, we find ourselves filling out FATCA forms every year, even though we have no connection with the USA or their FATCA law. Occasionally, there's a request for a current document showing an address that is not older than 3 months. Sometimes, the institution doesn't approve our fiat transaction and asks us to provide clarification on the origin of the funds by presenting contracts, invoices, or tax returns as proof. Unfortunately, some people have to go through bureaucracy and face annoying questions at random times when they simply want to use their money but are unable to do so until they complete these. Requirements: I prefer learning how to use software wallets or hardware wallets such as Trezor or Ledger. I'll find my favorite crypto dealer with whom I trade peer-to-peer and talk about life, coffee shops in the area, etc., rather than discussing tax returns. Of course, even finding a Bitcoin dealer without KYC can have its challenges. They may not always have liquidity, for example, when the price moves sharply and many people want to buy or sell Bitcoin at once. Additionally, the dealer could suddenly raise their fees. We might also struggle to find any reputable dealers in our area, which would require solving the problem with more complex transactions such as a derivative trade, a collateralized loan if we want to buy, or buying gift certificates or using prepaid debit cards if we want to sell. I don't suggest engaging in business with cryptocurrency dealers who lack a known reputation. It's wise to establish long-term relationships, utilize their services consistently, and familiarize yourself with them on a personal level. Begin by transacting only with individuals who possess strong personal recommendations. Asterisk frequently, people inquire if there's an issue when a cryptocurrency dealer provides coins they've purchased through a regulated exchange using an account in their name, for instance, a KYC coin, under their ownership rather than yours. In my opinion, this is the dealer's concern, not your own. However, I recommend accepting Bitcoin via the Lightning Network if the quantity involved allows it to be practical. Employing the Lightning Network saves time during transaction confirmation, and I advise against leaving transactions unconfirmed. The Lightning Network offers instantaneous confirmations while also lacking any transaction history, so we don't need to concern ourselves with the origin of the dealer's coins. For larger amounts, consider using Monero cryptocurrency, which offers a fast initial confirmation and doesn't carry any history from previous transactions. Despite potential challenges with Bankcoin and KYC coin, I find that using a hardware wallet and working with a trusted crypto dealer provides a more enjoyable experience. While many Bankcoin users have only faced an initial KYC questionnaire, the questions can accumulate over time, making it difficult to predict when they will occur. Additionally, answering these questions may be required for managing your assets as desired, purchasing, selling, or transferring them. For me, learning about the technology and building relationships with dealers is preferable. However, what works well for one person might not suit another. To help others become familiar with this process, I've created a book and online courses. The same principle applies to Bitcoin as it does in any other aspect of life. If you want to begin doing something, your initial investment should be in education and experience. You likely know individuals who wish to become more productive. They can be categorized into those who merely desire to improve but believe the issue is insurmountable, those who educate themselves about productivity by reading books on the subject, and those who apply what they've learned and consistently enhance their skills. The same holds true for Bitcoin. Your initial investments should focus on education, security, such as acquiring a hardware wallet, and personal experience through transactions and learning from first-hand encounters. If you're considering purchasing your first $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, it might be wise to invest in a hardware wallet, literature, or courses, starting with this book. Instead of investing large sums of money, invest your time instead. After spending on a hardware wallet and educational content, if you're left with, for example, $700, consider taking a portion of that amount, say half, and buy time from yourself. If your hourly wage is $30, then $350 of unpaid leave will buy you approximately 7 hours of study time. Before investing time in studying altcoins and their perceived advantages over Bitcoin, refer to the chapter titled Fooled by Features: Why Your Favorite Crypto Project is Unlikely to Succeed, Even If It's Better. Ensure that you have a thorough understanding of Bitcoin itself. This includes knowing how it works, where to purchase it without KYC requirements, having tried wallet, on-chain and Lightning payments, and truly grasping its functionality. If you wish to criticize mining, take the time to study how it operates. In my opinion, most individuals seeking improvements don't possess a comprehensive understanding of Bitcoin, which makes improvements seem logical to them. An additional valuable investment is building a network. Get acquainted with people in your area who are interested in Bitcoin and establish a peer-to-peer trading group. Organize meetups or attend them. Going back to liquidity and user-friendliness, purchasing or selling Bitcoins from a peer-to-peer merchant relies on the network of acquaintances that we have built. It's important to note here that deciding to exchange fiat for Bitcoin doesn't necessarily need to be done simultaneously as converting the fiat form from cash to crypto fiat. Thanks to stablecoins or interest-bearing dollar accounts through derivatives, as discussed in the chapter Bitcoin Strategies, you can buy Bitcoins when they're expensive and everyone else is looking to sell them. You can then hedge the dollar value, meaning you hold dollars instead of expensive Bitcoins. At a later point, you can exchange that dollar value for Bitcoin when you believe the exchange rate favors your interests. I provided an explanation on regular buying in this manner within the section titled Dollar Cost Averaging Without KYC from the Bitcoin Strategies chapter. In situations where purchasing crypto during a market downturn isn't feasible, an alternative strategy exists. This involves obtaining a crypto collateralized loan using Bitcoin as collateral, borrowing a stablecoin, and subsequently acquiring additional cryptocurrency. This method can be described as hacking, gaining experience while having fun in the process. It's possible to conduct all necessary market interactions in a peer-to-peer manner with ample liquidity available. It's advisable to test this approach before actually needing it. For those who are prepared and eager, there's an option to buy bitcoins directly through your wallet by converting dollar amounts into bitcoin or by utilizing a lending app borrowing fiat and using it to purchase bitcoin. If you later meet someone who wants to sell bitcoins, you can purchase bitcoin directly by making a rate decision or obtain crypto fiat, which will allow you to buy bitcoin in the future and postpone the rate decision until later. Alternatively, you can repay the fiat loan to the decentralized platform if you didn't have enough crypto fiat before but considered the Bitcoin rate good at that time. By doing so, you can entirely separate the decisions of now is a good rate and I need to change my papers into their crypto form. These are two actions that can be done at completely different times. This results in user friendliness that users of centralized solutions cannot even imagine. For instance, sending fiat to an exchange and waiting 3 days because you decided to do it on Friday evening. No thank you, I want the process to be completed within 15 minutes. Inheritance, another topic where we have a question mark with KYC, coin and Bitcoin is the ease of inheritance. With Bankcoin, we have one smiley face symbolizing that the state-legislated inheritance process is at least known, and it's quite likely that if something happens to us, the inheritance proceedings. We'll proceed with our other assets anyway. However, neither KYC, coin nor Bitcoin adhere to the standard inheritance process. Bitcoin is owned by whoever can send a valid signed transaction to the network. The Bitcoin network doesn't care about what the judge says in the inheritance proceedings. Therefore, when using Bitcoin, we must consider that we may not be around forever. If we're utilizing Trezor T, we can create a backup employing the so-called Shamir scheme. This allows us to divide the Trezor backup into multiple parts. We have the ability to configure how many parts are created and how many are required to reconstruct the backup. For instance, we might decide to produce 4 sets of backups and that we need any 3 to restore the backup. We will create 1 backup for each of our children, and another will be deposited at a notary's office along with our will. Alternatively, you may choose any other method that suits your needs. It is highly recommended to document this entire process, write a letter explaining about having the cryptocurrencies, how your heirs should access them, and how you wish for their distribution. Do not depend on them figuring it out themselves. The benefit of using a Shamir backup is that if, for instance, thieves were to rob one household, they would only find one part of the backup which is insufficient to gain access to the cryptocurrencies. They would require 2 additional parts, any combination of the remaining 3 in this example. There are certainly other methods available to ensure your heirs can access your crypto assets. For instance, you could store bitcoins in a multi-signature wallet that allows spending with 1 signature and requires multiple signatures or waiting for a certain period of time before accessing funds. Nonetheless, I personally prefer simple solutions that we can maintain long term. From a legal standpoint, cryptocurrencies should likely follow standard inheritance procedures, so heirs shouldn't just take them even if they possess the keys. The uncertainty in the previous statement is due to the fact that I am not providing legal advice within this book. Therefore, it's crucial to understand how inheritance operates in the specific jurisdiction involved. In the case of Bankcoin, it's beneficial for survivors to be aware of which institutions you hold an account with. Standard inheritance procedures do not guarantee your heirs will know about accounts at various exchanges and banks, particularly those located in foreign countries. Consequently, documenting access information, account numbers, contracts, and similar details is essential even when dealing with Bankcoin. That's why I've included only one smiling emoji for the simplicity of inheritance related to Bankcoin. It isn't that simple or automatic. Proper documentation, a last will, etc., are vital elements to consider for Bankcoin as well. I think adding a way to hand over the keys, if you are already doing such documentation, doesn't make that much difference. Therefore, even if it is an additional complication in the case of KYC, coin and Bitcoin, This problem can be solved quite easily. For a detailed guide, I recommend a book by Pamela Morgan called Crypto Asset Inheritance Planning, a simple guide for owners. Are Bankcoin companies evil? It might seem from this chapter that I have some serious problems with Bankcoin companies. Many understand that they are providing an inferior service and want to convince you to switch to at least KYC coin mode, like Kraken, for example. Many have said they will make NGU technology available to traditional users who already have other investments with them, such as stocks, bonds, other fiat currencies, and so on. Bankcoin companies obviously don't want to provide bad service and would love to have as many smiling emojis in my table as Bitcoin. The issue lies with the regulations, not the businesses themselves. The reason these companies are inconveniencing their clients by questioning the source of their funds and identity, reporting them to authorities or freezing accounts is not due to some malicious intent on their part. It's because regulators have informed these firms that they must either provide services this way or lose the ability to operate or access a fiat network such as SEPA, SWIFT or EDGE. As a result of these regulations, certain companies chose to cease providing regulated services, stating their unwillingness to offer subpar service to their clientele. Others migrated to jurisdictions with friendlier policies towards cryptocurrency or stopped catering to customers in less crypto-friendly regions. However, many firms have continued to provide services and aim to deliver the best possible service under the current regulatory environment. The problem is that the regulations keep getting worse, and so does their service. Companies are either complying with the wishes of governments or they are victims of state violence, such as company closures, fines, even criminal proceedings against statutory bodies. The sad thing is that we, as customers, perceive the poor quality of service, like when the bank is bothering us again, but often do not perceive the cause the bank has to bother us because the state tells it to do so under threat of violence. Any negative emotions about the poor quality caused by regulation should therefore be directed at officials and politicians. Unfortunately, many of these regulations are global, thanks to organizations such as the OECD and FATF, GAFI, but we can avoid some of them by choosing the right jurisdiction. However, it is even easier to exit the regulated environment and enter the peer-to-peer economy. In this chapter, I introduced the new concepts of Bankcoin and KYC coin. These terms may be unconventional, but they are necessary to distinguish among the various forms of Bitcoin. We have demonstrated that Bankcoin has significantly worse properties in nearly all areas. Although true Bitcoin, held within its own wallet and obtained anonymously, falls somewhat short in aspects like liquidity, user-friendliness, inheritance, and dollar-cost averaging, I've proposed solutions which prove either acceptable or even superior to Bankcoin. In my opinion, the price we pay for KYC coin or Bankcoin isn't worth it. Solving most of the issues related to true Bitcoin in a peer-to-peer mode is a one-time fixed cost that allows us to enjoy subsequent benefits. Nonetheless, we should be understanding towards those who use Bankcoin, as each individual has their own set of priorities and beliefs. Sometimes they simply lack the correct information, so let's provide them with it. You can find more content like this in my book titled Cryptocurrencies Hacking Your Way to a Better Life. It is essentially a guidebook for Bitcoin and cryptocurrency enthusiasts. Learn how to use the Lightning Network, how to accept cryptocurrencies, what opportunities there are for different professions, how to handle different market situations, and how to use crypto too. Improve your life. Get it on my eShop BTC, BTC and XMR, and even old school plastic or at Amazon.
Thank you for listening. I'm sorry for any possible quirks generated by the large language model or text-to-speech engine, but I think it is worth transferring these blocks into audio form for people who can't or don't have time to read. So I hope it was useful to you, and I would really appreciate if you used value for value podcasting apps to listen to this episode and stream me some sets or Boost. I read all the comments on the Boosts as well. So if you have any comment about this content, feel free to use Fountain.fm or any other app and boost this podcast. Thank you very much.